Welcome back to the Puck and Pod. On today's episode, we discuss our love for hockey and where it came from. And then we talk about amateur sports and our involvement. And finally, we discuss part 3 of the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's all coming up next right here on the Puck and Pod. Let's puck and go. We are back for another episode of the Puck and Pod. My name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
Gentlemen, before we get started, I have to... It's not normal for me to rant about stuff, but I'm going to rant about something today. And, it's one of those things where I go from 0 to 60 in like that. And that's me snapping my fingers in case those at home are going, what is he talking about? So, today... I'm shopping. I have to go grocery shopping, okay? And I went to our local wholesale store. You know, you have to pay to be a member at and all that stuff. I don't want to say names. I don't want to get sued. But let me just say this. I can go from the happiest person on this planet to the most irritated person in the split second in that place. Literally, just driving in the parking lot.
I was just going to say, it doesn't even start when you get into the store.
Literally, I'm pulling up into the parking lot, and I'm just driving across the main strip, and just people are walking in front of you without even looking. They're just like, do-do-do-do-do, like they own the road, and they're just walking. It's like, that's so dangerous. And then, of course, you finally, after about an hour and a half, you finally find a parking spot. You get into the store, and just everybody's taking their sweet time. You know, all I'm in there for is a jug of milk. I needed cereal and... Oh, there was a third thing. Anyway, whatever the third thing was, maybe a loaf of bread or something like that. And so three things I'm going in there for, which maybe you should probably expect to spend a little more time in that in a store like this. But literally everyone's cutting me off. Everyone's taking their sweet time to just get through the store. And then you go to line up to pay. And I lined up behind this guy who works in the store, but he had like a bunch of garbage bags and stuff he was taking probably to their back room or something like that. And so he gets out of the way and this lady comes in and she comes and cuts in front of me with her cart. And I'm like, I was in line. The guy that was there, I was just behind him, but I was in line. And there's like seven other people behind me. And this person just looks at me like I'm a jerk for saying like you're cutting me off, right? It's just like when people go to this store, they become the most self-centered, like arrogant people. I don't understand. It's like, you know, I love this store just for what they have in it. Like they've got everything that you possibly need, but I hate it for this reason. And it's like every time you go, you know, it's a nightmare. So I hate to open with a rant, but I just had to say it because it was something I've been thinking about for a few hours now. And it's just like had to get it off my chest.
We're all being relieved right now because we're not the only ones who feel that way.
I know. It's just
you're not alone,
so
brother.
Crazy.
It's appallingly lack of awareness of people nowadays when it comes to shopping or just involved in an event or anything like that. You know, you got people stopping in the middle of an aisle. And, you know, just pointing around trying to figure out what
and
they're doing.
And you're like standing there with your cart and you're like,
the worst is when Agnes
me and three other people
parks her cart right in the middle. Then she goes and walks over to the cooler thing, opens the door. So now 2/3 of the freaking aisle is taken up by sweet old lady Agnes here. And then she can't decide which brand of probiotic yogurt to get. It's like another 10 minutes.
Oh, and they got to check all the expiry dates and stuff like that.
And the card isn't even like centered. It's on a 45-degree angle, so you can't get by anyway.
It's cutting literally everyone off. Now, I will say this when it comes to that. Like, I think the worst thing is not so much the old lady, Agnes, because with an old lady, you can kind of understand and you're just like, oh, let me help you, you know, or whatever. But if it's two young people, so like a man and a woman, and they're literally taking up the middle of the aisle, there's not enough room for you to get by on one side or the other, and they're just sitting there talking to each other. Or today, for example, one of the other things was I'm waiting to pay, and the person directly in front of me, there's a till waiting for them. They start talking with somebody that they just ran into in the store, and I'm like waiting. I'm like, listen, I'll go, but like no, they're just sitting there talking away, and the lady that works there is trying to wave her down. Hey, there's a till here, you know, hello. And she just keeps talking to her friend. I'm just like, it's just like one thing after another, after another, after another. And so once again, I will not mention this store, but I will say you all know what I'm talking about.
Well, and you're looking at the parking lot side of things too. It's you're saying that no people pay attention when they're crossing. It's almost like they had the mentality like, well, it's okay if I get hit because then I can just sue them. It's like, I know. Why would you want to get hit?
I know.
You have possibly something that's going to ruin your life for the rest of your life if it's a very debilitating injury. But, you know, it was worth it to have your stance and your arrogance to walk out in front of somebody.
I feel like I can laugh about it now. But, like, yeah, it's some of the worst road rage incidences I've seen have been in that parking lot.
I will tell you a quick story about one that involved myself, actually.
Really?
And for a change, I didn't start the aggressive part. Yeah. So I was in the truck and we were pulling up. So the entrance to this store was on your left. So we pulled in off of the highway.
Right.
And you're about to go across the crosswalk. And of course you have to stop because there's 18 people going back and forth. Nobody thinks, you know, we'll let a few people cross. Then you go and a few people and you. No, nobody thinks that way.
Yeah. Nobody's courteous.
Exactly.
No, not at all.
So
it just makes no sense.
I found a gap. I went to go through, and then I had to stop on the crosswalk because at the end of the crosswalk, people were also starting to cross. So now I have to wait here for a minute,
yeah,
a minute and a half. And you're like, I really don't want to be on this crosswalk, but you guys didn't really give me a choice. I was trying to get out of the way. And then there was another gap, so I started to go again. And then, like, out of nowhere, this guy comes around the corner from the cart return that was kind of backed up.
Driving or walking?
Walking.
Okay.
With his wife.
Yeah.
And then, like, I'm basically committed to going now so that I can get out of the way. And he, like, speeds up to go in front of me, looks at me, swears at me, and then smacks the hood of my truck.
Oh.
Tiff was in the car. If she wasn't, I would have almost did it. I would have tuned this guy.
Yeah,
seriously.
Yeah.
Like, I can understand you yelling at me if you want. No, I mean, not really. Not in this situation. Yeah. I was literally trying to get out of the way so I wasn't a hazard.
That's right.
And he, when he smacked my hood, oh, man, I saw red. I just, like the nerve of you.
I know.
To touch, damage, possibly damage, you know, my personal property.
Mm-hmm.
And really, like, read the situation.
Over really nothing.
We're all trying to get the hell out of the way.
Yeah, yeah. So probably what happened was that guy was already irritated enough just having to deal with that parking lot. And that's why he gave you the aggression he did, right? But it's just like, I had that, you know, I had a similar problem, you know, driving through the parking lot where people just kept cutting me off and walking in front of me. There's no crosswalks. They're doing it where there are no crosswalks. And so it's just like, I'm like, seriously, guys, like you don't have the right of way in this situation, but they just kept walking. And like, and it was like one person would go and then I'd start going. And then immediately another person would start coming, like out of nowhere would start coming across to you. So I'd already had that bad experience. And then when I left the store, first of all, I could not wait to get the hell out of there. When I left the store and I'm in the parking lot trying to get out, I could see that people were walking kind of down the right side and they were going to cross the left side. But I started just speeding up and making sure that I was ahead of them so that they didn't cut me off because I was done with that place once I got out of there.
I've had like annoying experiences driving where I used to work for a car rental agency before I moved back to Calgary in 2012. And it was in the airport, in the Nanaimo airport. And I remember one night I finished my shift and heading out and there was a lady in front of me, I'm heading, you know, north back into Nanaimo. She gets up to the top of the intersection to, you know, start merging because there's at least a kilometer long merge lane when it comes to the Nanaimo airport. And then she stops and starts looking left to right, left to right,
oh, man,
left to right. And
so much.
Probably did that for a good 2 minutes till I started honking my horn. And then I see her like this, you know, waving her like, arms up in the air. What do you want me to do? And I'm like, and I'm literally like, get the effing going, you know, like it's a merge lane. You have so much time to get ready, get in there. And just getting ticked at me. And I don't know that I've been that livid with somebody that, you know, really hasn't fully impacted me as a person, but certainly was making my driving experience very, very frustrating.
2 minutes to put your horn on? I wouldn't even have waited 2 seconds. As soon as I saw them yield, I would have my hand on the horn until they moved.
Yeah.
I would not take it off.
It's funny.
It's dangerous to do that. It's more dangerous to do that than it is to properly and legally merge.
Yeah. It's funny how, like, you know, your fuse, though. Like, this is the part of the story that I kind of think about for myself is, like, I consider myself a very short or very patient person. So typically I have a longer fuse than most. But the moment I pulled into that parking lot, it was just
this,
like,
is a bad idea.
Yeah, I'm just like, I freaking hate this parking lot. It's the worst. And then it just makes the experience in the store that much worse. They need, like, a good, you know, 100 more square feet in that place, just in that parking lot, just to make it easier for everybody, because it's a nightmare.
Tiff was in there the other day grabbing a couple of items, just like you said, just a couple. And as she was waiting to go to the receipt check, there was a guy in front of her. He didn't have his receipt.
Oh, my gosh.
So the checker was like, sir, you need to have your receipt. And he goes, oh, here it is. And it was for the cafe.
Of course.
She's like,
he threw away the wrong receipt.
This is a blue ticket. This has nothing. Like, I need your receipt. Well, I don't have it. She's like, well, you're going to have to go back to the till and ask them to reprint it. I can't let you out of here until I go over your receipt. And he was just giving her, like, a hard time, right? And he's like, don't be stupid then. Yeah. Are you new here?
Is this,
like,
your first time?
Don't have the gall and audacity to get ticked at their policies. Like, it's a policy for a reason.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Like I said, like, it just, it's one of those things. It stuck with me, obviously, just because I was in a good mood when I went into that parking lot, and then it just immediately shut things down for me. So I'm much better now. Obviously, I've had a lot of time to cool off or whatever, but it's just so funny how it affects you like that. And, you know, there are probably certain days you should go to that store versus when you shouldn't go. And today was probably one of those days I shouldn't have gone, but we needed the things we needed, and, you know, I had to go. So it's just funny how that works out.
I'm not sure there is a good day.
No, you're probably
honestly,
right.
You know,
actually, there is one good day I've heard of, because a coworker told me, you know, we had that big snowstorm a while back where, you know, it was like a good couple of feet on the ground. My coworker said she was able to go to that store, get through, you know, everything she needed to get, and was able to get in and out, including the parking lot, in like 8 minutes.
Wow.
She said there was not a lot of people there, and so it was very convenient. I was like, so really the best time to go is when there's a snowstorm.
Okay.
That, or if it was a 24-hour store, then 2 or 3 in the morning.
I mean, yeah. That would be the best, I think, probably, too.
Wholesale cart racing should be an Olympic sport.
Absolutely.
Maybe not in this store. Oh, my God. It would be aggressive, that's for sure. Listen, let's move off of this negative topic, and let's talk a little bit about our love for hockey. Because, you know, most people understand that in this podcast, we talk a lot about hockey, don't we?
We do, yeah.
I mean, we love hockey. Now, we do like to talk about other sports, of course, but ultimately, hockey is kind of the golden sport for us. And let's talk a little bit about why we love hockey so much. Like, what got you guys into hockey?
For me, it was watching it with my dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we kind of touched on that one of our first or second episodes. But realistically, I wouldn't have probably watched it if I didn't want to, you know, be a little bit like my dad. And he watched the Toronto Maple Leafs on Saturday night. And I tell you, as I grew into be a teenager, I tried to cheer for different teams. And I just couldn't, because this was the team that I'd watched for.
Can I ask you a question? Who is the first team you tried to cheer for that wasn't the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Montreal.
Wow.
I'm serious.
Your dad must have been so mad at you.
I you know what? They still have a Montreal Canadiens blanket that I got for Christmas one year.
Wow.
The only year that I managed to try and be different from my dad. I think I was 12, maybe 11. And I think they still have that blanket that they use as like a throw blanket on some on the spare bedroom or whatever.
You and your dad have a very special relationship, right? I mean, ultimately, you guys, you tend to not just cheer for the same things, the same teams he cheers for, but like ultimately you have similar interests, right?
I would say, yeah. And I mean, it took a while, because the rebellious teenage years, there were times where, you know, you didn't want to say a word to him, but he was pretty strict too. I think both my parents were pretty strict overall, but it really helped shape the set of values that I have and live by today. Mm-hmm. And we were always told, Devin and I both growing up, that we were the most polite kids, you know, going around, and we said please way too much. Even at 30-something years old, my brother and I, we went away to go down to Nashville for work, and we went to a restaurant. I think we stopped at Subway in the airport, and we were both the same. And then, you know, what kind of bread? Oh, Italian herb and cheese, please. Yeah, what kind? Cold cut trio, please. Please, please. Toasted? No thanks. I'll get peppers, please. I'll get, you know, a few onions, please. And it's just like, please, please, thanks, thanks, no, no. Yeah. And it's just, yeah. We were always kind of brought up in strict conditions, but lots of love. And I think that's kind of what you take away from most situations and how you develop your love for anything.
Yeah.
You were shown it, right?
I feel like, you know, Americans look at Canadians and they always say, oh, Canadians are so nice. So nice. But really what it is that we're not nice. It's that we're just polite. Like, we're taught to be polite. And it's completely normal to say please and thanks. You know, one common thing that I've seen, if you watch YouTube, there's some videos on YouTube where Americans are talking about living in Canada, and they're like, the one thing I notice is that they say please and thank you all the time. If you've ever ridden a bus in Canada, whenever you get off the bus, you say thanks to the driver as you get off the bus.
Yep.
But in America, like, that's unheard of.
Really?
Yeah, it's unheard of.
I never would have even thought that.
Actually, not even America. Like, not just America. Like, there's other countries, too, where they say the same thing. They're just not used to it. And it's like, you know, they're just doing, the bus driver's just doing his job. But, I mean, you know, thanks for not killing me. Thanks for not, you know, thanks for not crashing or making me scared, you know, like, making it a comfortable ride. Like,
I mean, how is it any different than going to McDonald's, ordering a burger, and as you pay and take your bag away, you say thanks very much. They got you your stuff. Like, why wouldn't you say thank you?
Exactly. Yeah. What about you, Paul? Where does your love for hockey come from?
I'd probably say the same thing. My dad had a big influence on that. He was a big Maple Leafs fan. My best memory of falling in love with hockey was the 92-93 Cup run for the for the Maple Leafs. Now, obviously, they didn't make the final because Gretzky scored a cheap ass goal.
He's not still hating on that, is he?
But that really, like, invigorated my love for it in regards to watching the game. But my dad, he used to talk about the Maple Leafs all the time. He talked about, you know, the history of, like, Maple Leaf Gardens in regards to it was one of the first buildings to have escalators in it. And he would talk about the old teams back in the 60s, you know, whether it was Daryl Sittler, Bobby Bond, Tiger Williams, any of the, you know, the past Turk Broda, you know, any of those guys. We talk about that all the time, and it really got me engaged and interested in hockey, and it kind of percolated into my later years. Like, when I was around 12, 13, I tended to go out and play ball hockey on the street all the time as much as I could because I just loved the game so much. The idea of scoring and the hype that you get behind scoring, and in this case it was a ball, but into a hockey net, got all of our friends together. It just really left an impact on me, and I've had a love for the game since. I've always followed the statistics when it comes to teams, and I was probably even better when I was in my 20s and maybe late teens, where I could look at the statistics of an entire team, and I remember it all. I remember the placings. I remember the amount of goals. I don't know why. I was just able to hold on to that, and so it really invigorated the fact that I wanted to know more about the game, be as focused on it as I could.
That's really interesting. For me, numbers were always something that was like my enemy growing up. I was always terrible with math, and obviously better with English. Like, that was sort of my strong suit. So yeah, the statistics stuff. And I think that's probably why I'm not a big baseball fan, because statistics are big, you know, it's a big
central integral to that sport.
Yeah, it's big with baseball. So for me, it's hard to sort of understand that. But no, with hockey, for sure. You know, it's funny. My dad was never a big hockey fan growing up. For me, it was my grandpa, actually. My grandpa was a big Canucks fan. And so we would go to his house and we'd watch Canucks games on Saturday nights. And, you know, it was always fun to watch. And I remember I know I was 12 at this point. I mean, I know I cheered for the Canucks before this, but 94 was a huge part of my fandom for the Canucks specifically. And I remember just, you know, in school, we would talk about, you know, the towel power and all that stuff. You know, the big theme of the playoffs for the Canucks that year was called, I think it was called White Hot, because of the white towels, that was like sort of the whole playoff theme. And so I just remember really like getting really into it during that time and kind of never went away at that point. So, yeah, you know, my grandpa is probably my biggest influence when it comes to hockey. My dad was a sports influence. My dad was a sports influence, but he definitely, like, he wasn't a big hockey guy. He used to, like, he was more, my dad's, and you know my dad, he's always been somewhat of a hater when it comes to, like, hockey. But I remember hating Wayne Gretzky growing up because my dad hated Wayne Gretzky. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff. Anybody who was, like, a good player, my dad hated because they were I guess he more rooted for the underdog, I think was his sort of mindset. But he was always big on football. And so I blame my dad for getting me into football for sure.
It's cool with the history hockey that it's not just completely, you know, grounded in Canada and North America. One of the very first ice type games, it was called Shinty, like Shamir at the time, was done in Scotland. Mm-hmm. And that was back in 1608.
Wow.
So it is a game that's been around. It's been adapted over time. And certainly the fact that it kind of got started over in England and was more prominent here in Canada. Canada's rules for the game really kind of shaped the game. Certainly the first organized game was back in, I believe it was 1875, and it was done in Montreal, and it was the first organized game of hockey was actually done.
And the size of the nets were like field hockey nets. Yeah. They were massive.
Yeah.
Yeah, they weren't small.
Yeah. Soccer nets.
Do you guys find that you're kind of along that Canadian ideology of just kind of naturally enjoying and being an advocate for the game? What I mean by that is, like, even growing up in a situation where, like, my aunt and uncle, for example, my mom's sister and her husband, they're not really sports fans at all. Definitely not really hockey. Maybe a little bit over the years, but not like what I would consider us to be, you know? And, you know, we'd go over there for dinner. We'd go over there on a Saturday afternoon to hang out. We'd go there for Thanksgiving dinner or whatever the case. They would just turn the hockey game on because that's just what you did.
Yeah.
Even now when I go over to mom and dad's place, it doesn't matter who's playing. It could be Dallas and Utah. It wouldn't matter. They would turn on the hockey game to have in the background while we were there.
Yeah, it's cultural.
Just, yeah, it's what we do. It's who we are.
Yeah.
Do you find you're that way even now into your adulthood?
I definitely think I am. I mean, I'll watch whoever's playing. It doesn't matter. Especially the playoffs, because, like, with the playoffs, the games mean so much more. And so for me, it's just like, ultimately, I'm going to watch whatever, you know, because it's exciting. But even in the regular season, I love hockey. So
every game in the playoffs, you're on the edge of your seat.
Yeah.
No matter who's playing.
You know, it's like, even when you have like special tournaments and things like that too, like, you'll watch every game, even though it doesn't really, to you, it may not mean something, but it's just fun to watch and just sort of kind of get that because it's high intensity. And like I said, it means something to somebody. And so you're watching it for that reason.
Yeah, I agree. It's fun being able to teach, like, the youth about the game too. Like, my son, obviously, in his toddler years, doesn't really care. He's more interested in Batman and Transformers and all that stuff. But as he's been getting older and he's around other kids that kind of talk about these things, whether they're talking about hockey, sports, or, you know, what little kids kind of talk about, he's more interested in sitting around with dad and watching a game. And I love that impartment of knowledge that you can do for your kids. Or, you know, again, if you're in a situation where you can be a coach or you know, your teammates, and you can teach them something that you might know about the game, they can teach you. I've really, really valued that connection that a game like this kind of brings people together with.
You know, you and I have both done the same job. You're currently doing it for our local junior A team. How did you get involved with it? Do you remember kind of the part where you got started? Did it come organically? Did you ask for it? Did you, everything you're doing now, did you start all at once? Did you piece it?
As you guys know, I hosted a television show years and years ago. I did it for about 10 years and sort of gained a lot of experience doing that kind of public stuff, right? And I was approached years ago, like, I'm talking maybe 20 years ago, where somebody was like, hey, what do you think about doing, like, announcing for, we have a local football team called the VI Raiders. And they're like, hey, we need somebody to do announcing for the Raiders. And I was a little intrigued, but I was like, you know, I'm not that experienced with, like, what you have to do in terms of public address for football. So I wasn't 100% confident in what I would be able to do. So I did eventually turn it down, but then it wasn't much longer after that, where I was approached by the general manager of the team, the Nanaimo Clippers, who said, hey, look, we need a rink announcer, just announcing. Ultimately, the idea was that I would do announcing and they would have somebody else to do the DJ work, like the music. And so I was like, yeah, you know, I'm big into hockey and it's something I've always been interested in. So I said, I'll give it a shot and see, you know, if it works out and kind of go from there. And I ended up doing the whole season that year. And, my buddy Jan, who, it no longer lives in Nanaimo, but he is, we still keep in touch. He was the DJ. So he got to do all the music. He had a blast coming up with, you know, playlists and stuff like that. And I loved doing the public address stuff. And so, yeah, it just kind of stemmed from that. For me, it was never sort of I didn't have a mindset of I'm going to do this forever kind of thing, but it just sort of has turned out to be that I just keep going back to it because I do love it so much. And that's why I'm doing it now. Now, of course, it's a one person doing two jobs, you know, because you are doing, I'm doing the DJ work and the PA work, but I actually like that better to a degree too, because I have more control as to when I can speak, how it sounds, what music I play after I speak. So if it's related to what I'm talking about, that kind of thing, it's more fun that way. But I do work with another person who's what I call a on the ground host. My friend Darcy, he basically goes around the rink and he'll do like prize giveaways and stuff within the arena. And so I get to do DJ work alongside whatever he's doing. So if he's doing a prize giveaway, I might play a song like, you know, I played Money, Money, Money by ABBA, you know, when we did like a cash giveaway kind of thing. So like that kind of thing, right? It's just more fun where you can kind of integrate that kind of music, right? So yeah, I just enjoy it too much, I think, to quit doing it.
When I first started with the Clippers, because I'd been volunteering for a long time, Mike and I used to volunteer holding like the stop sign at the top of the stairs. We did that for years. We saw some stuff, man. We were volunteering. If you Paul might not remember, you probably do. I think it was Game 7 against Powell River in the 04 playoffs when we had to go to Game 7.1.
Yes.
Or whatever, and replay the final minute and 37.
I was there for the final minute, 37 seconds, and then they ended up winning.
That's right. They came back and they played for hardly any time at all, and Clippers won. But we were volunteering at the time. But shortly after that, because the person that was doing the game day at the time really knew I was into music, they asked, you know, we're looking to make a change. Do you want to come in and just do music? So at the time, it was really cool because the announcer, his name was Mac Mod.
I remember Mac Mod. Rest in peace,
Mac Mod. Mac Mod. Yeah, he was a hell of a guy. You know, that whole rosy red cheeks and belly jiggles like a bowl full of jelly when he laughs. He was just a boisterous, fun guy. Big red mustache. Beautiful, beautiful human being.
He was their PA announcer for years.
Years.
They have a jersey, because I guess he was a lacrosse player too.
Yeah, he was.
And they have a jersey kind of in the rafters, but like up on the concourse, basically, with his name and everything on it. And, you know, he's obviously forever remembered as the PA announcer for the Clippers. I remember going there when I was 12 years old and hearing him be the announcer for the Clippers. So definitely.
So my first game DJing, I think it was near the end of the second period. There was some physical stuff going on. Penalties weren't really going in the favor of the home team.
Yeah.
And during the intermission, Mac leans over to me and he goes, "Hey, when the referees come out for the third, you should play Three Blind Mice." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, funny." And he kind of chuckled and I chuckled. And so I was searching through the songs and there it was. So, okay, crank it up as the referees come out, turn up the volume. And no worse than what the crowd, you can hear them laughing.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the referee beelines it over to the penalty box.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you hear phones ringing. Mac picks it up. He's kind of chuckling. He's like, yeah, what? Huh? Uh-huh. What? No. He turns to me, he goes, "Brandon, turn that off." Because
they were going to give him a penalty.
Yeah. Because it's literally, the referee came over and said, "You turn that off now or I'm giving you a 2-minute minor."
Yeah.
And I didn't think anything of it. I didn't really understand the significance to a certain degree. Yeah. I did, but I didn't think it was that big of a deal. My first opinion was, why are they paying attention to the music
exactly.
and not focusing on the game? Anyway, Mac was like, "I'm sorry. I know that you probably didn't know any different, but I was totally kidding." Like, wow, that would have been useful information yesterday, you know.
That's so funny. Yeah,
story about Mac.
It's funny because, you know, there's obviously history with that, but ultimately now, to this day, you're not allowed to play that song because of that, what happened. So that's pretty funny. Refs are pretty, you know, they're pretty sensitive when it comes down to it.
They can be.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes in the wrong way. When you look at a guy like Steve Ogier, what he did to to Burroughs
Stephane Ogier. Yeah.
Stephane Ogier.
I made a YouTube video about that the day after it happened. And man, was I livid. I was livid for so long.
That was way under the cuff. Like, there was no reason for that.
Absolutely. You know, it's one thing to be sensitive as a referee, but it's another to actually, you know, like take retribution for it, or give retribution for it, I should say. That was a few years ago. But for those of you who don't understand what we're talking about, a referee by the name of Stefan Ogier basically called a penalty against Nashville when Vancouver was playing Nashville. This goes back to like 2010, I think. Because it was before the 2010 Olympics. The referee came up to Alex Burrows the next game, and I think Nashville and Vancouver were playing each other that same game. So it was like a home and home type situation. And the referee pregame came up to Alex and said, "I'm going to get you back for that." Because I guess what happened was in the previous game, Alex Burrows, had, I guess, what he considers dove, and he believed him, thus gave the Nashville guy a penalty. So he was embarrassed that he, you know, got away with one or something like that. Which is like, it has nothing to do with you anyway. Ooh. As a referee. Like, why do you care? You know, big deal. He called it, you called a penalty.
You thought you called it how you saw
yeah,
it.
Yeah. It's not like it actually makes you look bad, but you know, in the end, I guess maybe he thought it did. So he's like, "I'm going to get you back." And so he called like phantom penalties against Burrows probably three times that specific game. I know of one specific scenario where Burrows was literally standing in front of the net, and there was another Nashville player in front of him, and he basically just pushed him and he gave him a cross check penalty. And they ended up getting scored on, and you know what I mean? Like, just stupid.
Does the referee not realize that there's 150 cameras in the building that probably could realize that that's not a cross? Like, I know for a fact that the officials go for reviews.
Yeah.
Because the same thing used to happen to me when I was an umpire.
Yeah, yeah.
In fastball, right? You would not to the extreme, of course, but if something went down in a game, for example, there was times where I was umpiring provincial championships, and the age ranges sometimes are from literally like 8 all the way up to 18, right? There's 4 different categories within that age group. I think this particular time, age 15 to 18. And it was a female tournament. There was an instant where there was a foul ball called, and it was my call, and I thought it was the right call, and the coach got very, very heated, and it had to do with some interference over in the corner because there was like pushed up soccer nets against the fence, and the ball ended up getting entangled because of the way it kind of sliced away. It landed fair and then rolled over into the little soccer area. Well, I basically made the call that we're good to play on. Well, the ball got kind of stuck in there, and the runner ended up getting a home run.
Right.
Rather than what they thought probably should have been a double or a triple.
Yeah.
And basically what they did was they called the protest committee over. And there's a whole process to it. They meet with each coach, and then they meet with all the umpiring crew, and they ask the situation, and then basically they make the ruling, and then I have to go and tell them the ruling.
Yeah.
Well, they ruled in my favor, and then the coach asked for the game to be played under protest, which still does happen in the MLB today.
So is that the same idea as that hockey game where they have to replay a specific portion of the game?
Possibly. Or okay, possibly, okay. Yeah. So, and what happened is after that game, now as an official, I had to go into a review with basically now the protest committee, which involves the umpire in chief, as well as 2 other members from the tournament committee.
Oh.
And then they basically review the situation. How did we do? Did we get it right? And then, you know, for next time. Mm-hmm. But you can get in trouble in those situations. Like, you're not going to get fired or anything in our situation. I mean, this is minor ball we're talking about. But those processes all go under for a review. So you have to know that officiating at every level, especially the highest level like the NHL, is going to be under review. I really just don't understand how. I mean, definitely not today.
Yeah.
Maybe 10, 15 years ago.
This was 2010, 15 years ago.
Now, was Burrows mic'd up or something?
No, he did an interview afterwards, and he said everything that he was saying.
I see.
I think he might have even gotten fined for saying what he said, but
probably lying.
But, well, you say that as a Leafs fan. Yeah. But get this. So I just looked up, while you were talking, I looked up Stefan Ogier's Wikipedia, and it's interesting. There's actually an entire section on his Wikipedia called Controversy.
Wow.
So I'll just read you some of it. And in this this actually doesn't even have to do with the Canucks, but it basically says, Ogier has been caught numerous times in on-ice controversy. In an NHL game, December 13th, 2005, in Montreal, he assessed Phoenix Coyotes captain Shane Doan a misconduct penalty after concluding he verbally abused an official and made culturally insensitive comments against the referees, who were French-Canadian. The NHL reviewed the allegations against Doan and concluded that they were baseless. Then, after a game on January 11, 2010, Vancouver Canucks forward Alex Burrows accused Ogier of having a personal vendetta resulting from an incident in a previous game. Burrows stated that Ogier told him before the game, and there's video proof of this, that he was going to get him back, quote-unquote, for making the official look bad previously. Burrows received four penalties in the third period of the game, a Vancouver loss against the Nashville Predators. The league investigated Burrows' claims and concluded that they could not be substantiated while stating that referee Ogier's intentions were beyond reproach. And then finally, on March 12, 2011, so a year later, numerous Islanders players accused Ogier of conspiracy, saying that they felt the officials saw the Devils' playoff run as more important than their own playoff push. There was a large discrepancy regarding power play time. A New Jersey Devils player was insulting the Islanders coach and his assistants during the game, and the player was not punished for his actions. Additionally, when alternate captain Franz Nielsen spoke to Ogier about what was going on, he was given what was the first game misconduct penalty of his career. Islanders interim coach Jack Capuano stated that he requested and received no explanation from Ogier on the Nielsen penalty, citing difficulty engaging the officiating crew throughout the entire game. On March 13, 2011, the NHL Senior Vice President and Director of Officiating, Terry Gregson, confirmed to Newsday that the NHL was indeed looking into this matter. So that's three separate controversies regarding one referee. Now, the NHL announced Ogier's retirement in 2012, June 15, 2012, amid speculations that he had been pushed out by the league. So, you know, whether or not the thing with Burrows is true, whether or not, when you've got three controversies kind of tied to your name as an NHL referee and the possibility that the NHL actually made you retire, that says something.
It was almost sweet justice in 2012 where he was, I guess, skating behind the net, refereeing a game. And I guess a player's stick came and whacked him in the face.
He didn't give him a game misconduct for that?
Yeah. Yeah, I fully believe in like karma and all that stuff. And if whatever you put into this world, you're going to get it back. And I wouldn't be surprised it's tenfold.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's never going to have his name in anything other than controversy in this case. But yeah.
Well, and you can say the same for a guy like Angel Hernandez in baseball, right? Like, you're not famous for what you did good. You're famous for, like,
you're infamous.
Playing around with the game. Infamous.
Yeah. Infamous, yeah. It's sad when you think about it, but, you know, I used to have the same feelings about certain referees in the BCHL where it seemed like any time they reffed a game for the Clippers, they were always calling penalties against the Clippers and never calling penalties against the other team. It really felt that way. And then seeing, like, those referees end up eventually making it to the NHL as referees or linesmen or whatever, you're just kind of like, ugh. Like, what is going on with this world? But at the same time, I could just be a biased fan seeing it one way when it really is a different way, you know what I mean?
It's almost like it's a movie or something.
Yeah, yeah, literally. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, coming back full circle when it comes down to it, like, yeah, I absolutely love doing the announcing and the DJ work for the Clippers. It's so much fun. And you know, you're getting paid to basically watch hockey, you know, to a degree. You don't get to really watch that much because you're busy doing other things. Again, doing two jobs versus one. But it's still fun. And I try to make an effort now as I do it to kind of keep an eye on who has the puck when they have the puck, because more times than not, I've been burned as the announcer announcing the wrong goal scorer or something, because they call up and tell me based on what the ref tells them. And like, for example, recently there was a game where There's a player named Connor Deturis on the Nanaimo Clippers who is number 19 for them. They call up and tell me that Deturis scored the game-winning goal in overtime for them, right? So I'm announcing him as the goal scorer, and we agreed that whoever was the goal scorer would be the first star of the game. So we announced that him as the first star of the game as well. And so when I announce it, when I announce the first star, Darcy, who's my guy on the ground, he's interviewing the players right at the end. When we win, he interviews the players, and it's really, really great. But he goes, yeah, no, it's not the tourist. It's actually this other guy named Chase Hull, who actually did score the goal, but they told me the wrong name. So I was like, man, I must have looked like a freaking idiot, you know, when I'm announcing this player's
score. You get that all the time. You get people coming knocking on the door telling you, hey, it wasn't them who scored. It. And you're like,
I'm just telling you what they told me. And that's why I'm trying to make a conscious effort now to actually like keep an eye on the game more. It's really hard to do because you're trying to do things like find the next song to play or, you know, read the next read that you need
Part
to read.
Or script,
whatever. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it's a lot of work, but, you know, my mentality when it comes down to it, and I'm sure you felt the same way, but I always tried to be as good as I possibly could. Meaning like, it, you know, a lot of people will go into a job, especially in junior hockey, where it's like they'll just put out the minimal effort because they're not getting paid that much or whatever, right? But for me, it's like I want people to remember what I'm giving them in terms of the experience so that I can say this is what I'm worth. Or, you know, if another opportunity, say a better opportunity comes later on, they're going to look at me and say, well, he's the best guy out there.
Yeah.
We're going to bring him up, right?
Yep.
So for me, and it, you know, I just want people to walk away going like, that was an awesome experience, you know, more than anything.
Yeah. That's the way how I felt about it too, especially because for the first, I think it was 3 or 4 years that I did, it was a volunteer position.
That's right?
And I just loved doing it so much that it really didn't matter. And then, you know, life starts to get in the way and things happen, but, it is a really neat experience. It's hard work. It's
very
not easy,
yep.
Especially as you're doing both jobs. But you have usually pretty good support staff. You know, you get to hang. It's like a hangout spot on your Friday or Saturday night, right? You know, because you're working with the same crew in the booth, and you guys get to know each other and that sort of thing. And the crew on the ground, like you say, and the in-game people. And yeah, it's cool to be part of like an organization like that. Or you know, it's a hobby that becomes more of like even more of a passion. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. No. Exactly. For me, that's sort of the same mentality. It's just making sure that we give the best possible product out there. And for me, like also too, energy is key too, right? So you get out there, totally. You're not going to be like a, you know, Clippers goal scored by number 19, Connor Deturis. No, it's like Clippers goal scored by number, you know, and I did steal your woo. I will say that right now. For those of you who've never been to a game where Brandon's been the PA, he wooed after he would announce a goal. And so I do that too, because it's a tradition that I wanted to carry on more than anything. Because if I didn't, the fans would do it anyway.
That's right.
You know, if you go to a game and you don't woo, they're going to woo. And they want you to woo because it's an energy thing and it's exciting, you know. And one thing I've started doing now when it comes to power plays, they have a sponsored power play. So, you know, I'll say, you know, I'll say like, your Nanaimo Clippers are now on the, and I won't say the sponsorship name for our show, but on the blah, 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 power play. And I get like, I say that to get people like right into it. Right. And people love it. They expect it now. So it's really fun for me.
Yeah. You guys have had obviously a lot of involvement, you know, not on the ice, but obviously with the organizations. My experience, obviously, with amateur sports just in general has never been, you know, any type of involvement. I've gone to games. I remember going to, like, seeing the Calgary Hitmen when I was a teenager with my friends. And, you know, you saw guys like Pavel Brendel. Even in my later years, saw Ryan Getzlaff, saw Andrew Ladd. A guy I really wanted to make a career but never happened was Brent Cron. He had such a good juniors time with the Hitmen, but just couldn't make it as a NHL goaltender. But it's weird with when it comes to like amateur sports, especially amateur hockey. After having lived in a city that, you know, the Flames were paramount for everything, it was hard to kind of get into it at times as I got older, just because you notice the skill difference, and it's because it's men and boys, right? I really had, even when I moved here and came to see the Clippers, I had a really hard time adjusting to watching the Clippers compared to having seen, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs, Calgary Flames, Edmonton Oilers, all these, you know, National Hockey League teams. But once I started spending time going with friends and stuff like that to the games, you really gain an appreciation for how involved the entire crowd is into the game. And I've actually come to love that a lot more. I haven't necessarily been to a game this year, but I've come to understand everyone's love for the Clippers. And I think it's great.
It's funny because, you mentioned about the sort of men versus boys kind of mentality. And it's funny, I remember a few years ago when I first started working for them as a PA announcer, I went to back in the day when Victoria had an ECHL team called the Salmon Kings, going to a Salmon Kings game and watching them play versus, say, the BCHL, comparing the two. And it's just like speed-wise, it was like, night and day. However, I will say now, like, today's hockey is a lot faster. Oh, yeah, and totally a lot more heavy hitting and aggressive. And it's like the junior game is really starting to pick up. It's like they're changing the structure of the game so that they're more adaptable to, say, pro. Yes. Earlier on, right? And I think it's because college hockey is starting to change too, and they're making it so that players are almost better now when they are in getting into the NHL. So it's exciting.
I got to give a shout out to a guy that I knew in elementary and in high school, not Danny Heatley. Like I said, I used to play ball hockey against him, but
he's naming names out here.
Yeah, a guy that, again, I was in probably three different elementary classes with him growing up. We were never in the same classes in high school, but I remember seeing him around and, wishing him the best in regards to his journey to the NHL. Greg Watson, I'm sorry that it didn't actually quite work out for you in regards to the NHL, but, being picked where you were picked, he was a second round pick.
Oh yeah,
he was the all star of the CHL all star game that they had, so he was their top pick for that. Big guy. He got traded to the Ottawa Senators at one point after he was drafted by the Florida Panthers.
Cool.
Big guy. Just his knees, unfortunately, kind of gave out on him, and he wasn't able to make the career for himself. But want to give you a shout out so that your name's still heard, bud, and wishing you the best right now.
That's always the hardest thing when it comes to pro hockey, right? It's like you need your body to be able to keep up with whatever demands that are asked of you, right? So it's tough. But I will say this about the NHL now is that there's, the strength and conditioning coaches that they have are like incredible. And they make people come back from some pretty serious injuries. It's pretty crazy. Consider like what Brock Besser had basically with that back injury. Like most guys wouldn't be able to come back from that. A broken back?
Yeah.
It's tough. Yeah,
that'd be impossible.
Yeah. But, one thing I want to talk about in a future podcast, specifically just talking about the BCHL, is the kind of crazy stuff that's happening in the BCHL right now, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but with the way that the WHL and CHL is basically allowed now to have players get scholarships for the NCAA, it's basically going to hurt the BCHL, and the BCHL is going to lose some teams after this year. Wow. So like the Penticton Vs, who have been like one of the best teams in the BCHL for years, are moving to the WHL starting next year, which is a crazy, crazy thing. And Chilliwack may be following.
Years back, weren't they supposed to have a WHL team come into Nanaimo?
They were trying to vote on a referendum. Well, let me rephrase. We voted on a referendum to potentially build a new arena, which would
in a complex, really.
Yeah, it was an event center, basically. Yeah. Ultimately, so it would have like a 5,000 seats in it, and it would allow people to, we'd be able to have a WHL team, and then other events like concerts and wrestling shows and things like that. Would have been really great.
There was a hotel that was supposed to be attached.
They
to
built
it.
The hotel. They did build the hotel, the new hotel by the conference center. That was supposed to be a part of the whole plan, right? But people voted no against the event center, and it was really they were voting against borrowing the money to build the event center.
Of course.
Who knows what's going to happen with the BCHL if this does kind of happen where teams end up leaving and going elsewhere. They may have to merge with the USHL, which would be kind of exciting, but kind of scary at the same time too when you consider what it means in terms of me having a job with the Clippers, for example, or even just the fans being able to watch a team that they love anymore. So I think that's something we should probably talk about in a future episode, maybe, and we'll do a little research and kind of go from there. But I say we move on to our entertainment side of things, gentlemen. We've talked about two phases so far of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Let's talk about the third phase.
Yeah, I think we'll today maybe just cover only half of the third phase because there's an 11 movie phase.
That's a big phase.
Yeah, and we probably talk for the next 2 or 3 hours on this. So
that's what she said.
We'll keep... We'll keep it simple. When we're looking at phase three, it started off with Anthony and Joe Russo's second movie that they had done with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and that was Captain America: Civil War.
I really like that one. That was, to this, with all the movies that have come out, that one's probably maybe three or four on my list.
It might be the best Captain America movie. I haven't seen the newest one yet, but...
Winter Soldier would probably be still my top with that one.
I think, you know what, Winter Soldier for me, I think I've kind of worn it out a bit. I think I've seen it like 10 times, and whereas I may have only seen this one two or three, but I don't know. Civil War for me. But.
It was an interesting kind of, it was an interesting contrast to most of the Marvel movies where it's like, you know, the good guys are all basically fighting each other. It's not something you typically see.
Yeah.
You see it in wrestling all the time, right? People turning heel and things like that, but you don't see that typically in a superhero movie.
Well, give credit to the fact that they were able to build in a bit of the storyline. You know, we came to Bucky Barnes and the Winter Soldier into this, and Steve Rogers having that history with him, and obviously wanting to protect him in Civil War. You know, he's being framed obviously by another character who is a villain in the movie. I won't state it for the people that want to see the movie. Yeah, I'd say one of my favorites too. In regards to, there was a bit of shock and awe in regards to the fight that they had, you know, where they had the division of the two sides, and obviously seeing Spider-Man be reintroduced back into the MCU after there was the whole, you know, debate about whether he even would with Sony having the rights. I thought that really stepped up that movie for that reason.
It was definitely a nice little kind of gift. Right? To the fans of the MCU, for sure.
Really progressed Tom Holland's career.
Oh, huge.
Yeah. Originally, there was... Because there was two actors that were in the running for it at the time. Tom Holland was one of them. The other one was Asa Butterfield. He was in a movie called Ender's Game, which was pretty good. Had Harrison Ford in it as well. And I believe he was in... Don't Come In, I think it was another movie they was in. It's about a vampire movie. Nonetheless, I was really rooting for Tom Holland. I had seen The Impossible with Naomi Watts and thought he did such a...
Is that the Tsunami movie?
That's the Tsunami
movie. Yeah.
He did such a fantastic job.
Yeah, he was really good in that.
McGregor was in that one,
too.
McGregor. He, for a kid actor, he certainly carried his role and did really good. So I was really rooting for him. I liked Asa Butterfield, but Tom Holland had a history of being involved in martial arts and parkour and stuff like that. So I'm like, this guy's perfect for the role.
You know he's going to fit the role perfectly. Exactly.
And when he got casted, I was, you know, gave a fist pump in that regards. And like that whole dynamic between him and Tony Stark in terms of that mentorship was a really fun part to watch about that movie too.
Just thinking about Tom Holland's kind of beginning of his career when he was in that movie, right? It was called The Impossible.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, just thinking about Tom Holland's career when he was in The Impossible, just how young he was and how good he was as an actor. It reminded me a lot of Christian Bale. When you consider like Christian Bale got his start as a child actor as well. Yeah. And he was really good as an actor, even as a child too. Very similar kind of acting styles and just like really almost feels like the same guy almost, you know?
There was a quote as you're talking about Tom Holland's relationship with Robert Downey Jr. and Tony Stark as Spider-Man. There was a point in the movie where Tony Stark remarks how attractive Aunt May is. And it's so funny because Robert Downey Jr. and Marissa Tomei had a relationship in the 90s. And they've also appeared in two other films together.
I'm sure they're good friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love little things like that you find out about in the movies and how there's like a purpose to it, but you don't necessarily catch it as a purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny.
The introduction, obviously, of Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther as well was huge for that. I had never really paid much attention to Black Panther when I was a kid when it came to the Marvel comics. So I was aware of the character, but just didn't really look too much into him. So to see that character brought to life and to kind of learn about more of the history of the character.
And especially knowing what Chadwick was going through.
Yeah, after you know? The fact, right?
Yeah.
You know, God rest his soul. Mm-hmm. He was a really cool character. And some of the stuff that he could do, like I said, even that one scene where he's chasing after Bucky and Bucky like jumps off of the balcony and then you see Black Panther grabs his claws and sticks it into the wall and slides down and starts chasing after him. That was a really cool scene. And even the car chase too, where he's trying to catch Steve Rogers on the motorcycle and Lily grabs the tire and, you know, goes flying off. It was that was a fun part of that movie.
There apparently wasn't any CGI used in that scene either.
I'm not surprised at all.
I mean, they could do a lot. I mean, you know, there was a scene where, I don't know if it was from Civil War or if it was from another one, but where, you know where Steve Rogers grabs onto the building and grabs onto the helicopter?
Yep.
That was a legit helicopter he was holding onto. And actually, he was actually very uncomfortable in that scene as well.
Oh, yeah. Like, you could easily damage tore, ligaments like, and all that
tore
stuff.
His muscle, yeah. Pretty crazy.
Very, very much the case.
So what's the next one after that one?
So after that, we had one of my absolute favorite actors join in on the MCU, and that was Benedict Cumberbatch's Doctor Strange.
What'd you guys think of this one? Because Paul and I were briefly talking about it before he got here. I adore this movie.
Yeah, I do too.
This might be number two
on
my kind of favorites out of the MCU. Like, I actually really, really enjoyed this. I've seen this. I can't even tell you how many times.
It's great. And what's interesting is, I mean, obviously not all the Doctor Strange movies are as good as this one, but it's definitely a good movie. I love it a lot.
Rachel, I wasn't super happy with Rachel McAdams being cast as that character. I actually think they needed a bit of a stronger female role, especially when you get the likes of Scarlett Johansson's character and Elizabeth Olsen's character. Kobe Smulders to a point, I suppose, but more so the other two females.
Yeah, like you almost compare it to the character that Natalie Portman plays in the Thor movies, right?
Yes,
like
very much.
That sort of romantic.
Ancillary.
Yeah. Romantic facilier. Yeah. And it's just like, you almost wonder if they had other plans for her, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe they still have those plans. I don't know. But, look what happened with Natalie Portman, right?
She got dialed back, obviously, in the next Doctor Strange movie, too. So.
But, her being cast in the first place, it's kind of a situational thing, right? Because at the time, they were saying, she's so hot right now, you know, so they got to cast her kind of thing, so.
Yeah, like, they had a really good cast, obviously, for this movie. I thought Tilda Swinton as the...
Oh, she's brilliant.
Yeah,
she like, does. No matter what she's in, I don't think there's a movie she's in where I'm like... they could have done without her, you know? She was in Lord of the Rings.
Tilda Swinton, but like what her character was in Doctor Strange. I'm trying to remember the name.
The bald,
wasn't she the master? I'm going to butcher this guy's name, but I love him. But I always say Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah.
Is that how you say that guy's name?
Oh,
does anybody actually know?
Hang on, I'll look it up.
I think it's Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Okay. Either way, apparently he's like an actual fifth degree black belt in karate in real life. So a lot of his movements in his scenes, they're genuine because that's how he would train. That's how he would perform his martial arts. That's pretty nuts. A fifth degree black belt, eh?
That's awesome. Yeah, it was the ancient one was Tilda Swinton's.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah.
Character. And originally in the comics, it wasn't the ancient one wasn't a female role. It was a male role. But you're going to bring in somebody like Tilda Swinton, who is probably one of the better, at least English actors out there. She did perfect for her role. I loved her in the later Marvel films that she was in. I won't say which ones. We'll get to that when we get to that. But I thought she was. Yeah, great as the Ancient One. Like, really good dynamic with her and Benedict Cumberbatch's Doctor Strange, Steve Strange. I can't say enough about her. When you're looking at some of the other actors that were in there as well, you said Chiwetel.
I know how to pronounce it, by the way. I looked it up on IMDb. His name is pronounced Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Ejiofor.
Chiwetel
Ejiofor.
Ejiofor. Ejiofor. One other actor I've really liked for a long time. Again, he's known, but he's not super well known. He played Caecilius in Doctor Strange, and that was Mads Mikkelsen.
Mads Mikkelsen, yeah.
I've always considered him very menacing in the roles that he was in. Like, I loved him in Casino Royale when he was.
Me too.
And
Mads Mikkelsen, yeah, he's really good.
Just jerk vibes.
Super sinister. Super sinister. Sinister.
But,
yeah.
But he's played, you know, lighter roles too. Like, he was in the King Arthur remake with Clive Owen back in the day. And his character was even cool in that one. So I really loved that they had casted him for this film. Again, this particular film doesn't get a lot of kudos compared to a lot of the other Marvel films because I guess people didn't quite like the feeling of the movie.
Yeah.
But I thought he carried his role really well. And that back and forth dynamic between him and Benedict was awesome.
I loved him in Casino Royale. I loved his character, like the blood from his eye, like, oh, so cool. We should do a talk on James Bond movies.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. But yeah, moving on. What else? What other movies we have here in this specific phase?
So we all loved the first one, and James Gunn is brilliant when it comes to these films.
Although I still believe he's ruining DC, but we'll see about that. We'll see about that.
We could see with the new Superman how that works out.
Hey,
blasphemy! This is an MCU talk.
I know. But you know, you can't have a guy come from MCU to go to the DCU or EU. I can't remember. Anyway.
Well, technically, you did with Joss Whedon. So
I know. And Joss Whedon ruins things too.
Yeah,
so.
He does. But yeah, James Gunn, obviously, we all loved it. And it was really cool to see Kurt Russell in this, but Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Loved that movie. Absolutely.
Another great soundtrack.
Yeah. I
love it.
You know, I feel like movies are sometimes, it determines how good a movie is based on the soundtrack.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if it play, it could be the worst movie, but if it plays really good music, you're just like, I loved it.
I just love through the entire MC universe how they keep that comedy side intact.
Totally.
And as much as, you know, the end of the world happens in every film, it's they've got a lightness to it, or they create a lightness to it. I guess that's a way to maybe make it more family-oriented,
mm-hmm.
just to include a little bit of for everyone, you know?
Larger audience base.
Larger audience, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, starting off that movie, obviously, with Mr. Blue Sky, you know, such a great song for watching, you know, Baby Groot just kind of walk through the entire the entire screen while they're all fighting this giant interdimensional being coming in. It was fun that way.
Totally.
A lot of kudos I have to give to Canadian-born actor Paul Clementieff, was really good as Mantis. In the comics, she tended to be actually this martial arts master that he didn't. Obviously, again, this movie, you got her as kind of the quirky side comedy to the movie. But she's really kind of developed her resume as she's kind of kept going from this movie. Like, she was in the most recent Mission Impossible that I thought she carried.
It's another series we should talk about.
Yeah, she carried that. And then they got other awesome actors, like Sylvester Stallone was in it for like a brief period. But again... Like,
was he even credited? Now that I think about it, was he even credited in this?
I believe he was, yes.
Yeah. Sometimes you get a big role, or a big star, I mean, kind of show up for a movie and then literally only be in it for a minute and don't get credited. They just wanted to be a part of it, kind of thing. It's kind of interesting, but...
So we talked about the soundtrack and how the music kind of makes the movie, and I saw this little tidbit I thought was interesting. Russell Bobbitt, who's a Hollywood prop master, I guess he had difficulty finding cassette decks that were used in the first film.
Oh.
And I guess all of the Sony Walkman headphones that they had found were all broken. So I guess he actually reached out to Sony to see if they had any available they could use for filming, and they didn't. So he literally had to create 6 different pairs, and he built them. He made them.
Crazy.
To look exactly like the old Sony headphones and everything. And such an art form.
Totally.
You know, it's
yeah, I mean, you know, and I think prop masters don't get enough credit for that kind of work, right? Just because it's not so much that it's just a prop, because like obviously they could have just used the broken one, but you need it to be functional so that it is believable, right? So that you really believe it's a legit Walkman that he's got and everything. It's just a lot of work involved.
I was just looking through some of the trivia, and I forgot that the character Taserface was in this.
Taserface!
Another actor from This Is Us, you and I were talking about earlier, that's Chris right. Sullivan, yeah.
And, you know, I found one of the, we're talking about, you know, songs, The Chain by Fleetwood Mac carried that film. It was perfect.
Absolutely. Also symbolic, too, right?
Yeah, the old soul... that this movie kind of latches onto, that vibe of being an old soul, yet it's like completely futuristic.
It's very much because that song hyped it up in the trailers. It was hyped up in the movie. Climactic moments had that song. It was I can't say enough. I really enjoy that film.
Here's an interesting piece of trivia. Just while we're still talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. Dave Bautista, right, who plays Drax, when he found out he got the role of Drax, he broke down in tears because he was overjoyed at getting a Marvel comic book role. So, like, for a lot of actors, this is a dream come true. Because most likely it's a reoccurring role, first of all, but also the fact that you're cementing your spot in history, really, right? It's like anybody, if you ask any actor out there, maybe not any actor, but you ask most actors out there, their dream was to be in Star Wars, right? Yeah. Or something like that. Something epic.
And he was casted perfectly. He was a really good choice.
Yeah, that character's so awesome. I still, even every time I watch these movies, I struggle to hear Bradley Cooper as Rocket.
Me too.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't sound like him ever.
At all.
When I found out that it was him, I was like, no way. Like, there's no way. That's not Bradley Cooper. He does such a good job at masking his voice.
Yeah.
But just because he makes it so raspy and stuff too, right? But
and he's got that New York accent kind of thing to it, yeah. Oh, man. I don't know. I really can't. There's got to be some other effects they've done to it, too, because it sounds drastically different.
Well, if they can do that to Britney Spears, I'm pretty sure they can do that to him, so.
There's.
Well, we were all happy, obviously, to see Spider-Man come back into the MCU, and so that was the next film was Spider-Man Homecoming.
Great movie. Absolutely great movie. And it was the ensemble was great, you know. I remember thinking when Marissa Tomei was announced as Aunt May, I was just like, "What? Okay, come on." Like,
seems odd, doesn't it?
Yeah, because I'm so used to like the Tobey Maguire Aunt May being like this old lady, right?
Sally Field from
and so when it's her, they did kind of push it down this other kind of avenue, and she did such a great job with it. And just like I said, like, you know, the entire cast was so good.
Yeah, I was quite surprised with Zendaya in terms of like her monotone reactions throughout the movie were great, but that she became like the MJ of the MCU.
Yeah, the love interest.
Yeah, I was not expecting that. I was expecting like a Gwen Stacy or a Mary Jane Watson. So Michelle Jones was definitely a different take on that.
Yeah, I it's funny because when I saw her character and the way she was, I was just kind of, my mindset was like, okay, well, this must be more of a Gwen Stacy situation. Like, he's not going to have interest in this girl. And then it kind of develops the way it develops, right?
Is this the first movie we see Michael Keaton as Adrian Toomes?
Yes, yep. It is.
Yeah, it is.
As Falcon.
And he kind of starts the movie off, I think. That's
yes.
Well, I think what was part of their inspiration for casting him in that role was that he had done a movie called Birdman prior to being casted into that, and kind of really got really re-noticed for a lot of his acting abilities. Like, he was pretty popular in the early 90s and even kind of part of the mid-90s, and then kind of fell off a little bit. And then after Birdman, like, everyone's like, oh, this guy can act, actually. He's really good.
I love Michael Keaton so much.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, he was, and I thought he was great as Adrian Toomes. I remember watching the 90s Spider-Man, and that was actually one of my favorite villains in the 90s Spider-Man cartoon series that they had.
That's right, the old cartoon Spider-Man. I used to watch it every Saturday or something?
I believe it was on, every Saturday. Yeah.
I used to love that, the old school Spider-Man.
And then they had other characters that were in it. Bokeem Woodbine played Shocker. Again, remember Shocker from the 90s series. They had Donald Glover, who was pretty well known for The Martian and his role.
Probably better known for Community. Just for, you know, playing Troy in Community. I've always considered him this sort of comedic guy, right? But he did that show Atlanta, which I know he's won awards for and stuff, and of course he's a rapper as well, under the pseudonym.
So do you guys know who voices the Spider-Man computer Karen in the movie? Jennifer Connelly does the voice. What's interesting,
that's right,
boyhood crush,
who's she married to?
I don't know. Who is she married to?
I don't know.
Paul Bettany.
Is that right?
Who voices
Vision, or plays Vision.
And voiced Jarvis before.
Jarvis and Vision. Jarvis then Vision.
It's kind of interesting. Yeah. I just love those connections.
So Donald Glover goes under the rap pseudonym Childish Gambino, for those of you who don't know. But I have heard recently that he's going to be retiring that that character.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Brandon, not a rap fan.
Yeah, I liked the fact that he was in this film. He hasn't really portrayed the character that he's supposed to be yet. His character in the movie was just kind of a low-level thug. Later on, he actually becomes the Prowler in the comics, which everyone will know the Prowler from Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. So it'll be cool to see if they do future Spider-Man films, if they bring him as an actor back and they introduce the Prowler into one of the movies.
I agree. Yeah, I really like him. I think he's talented as an actor, and he's really funny too. All right, so what is the next movie in the series?
So I feel this one kind of revived Thor a little bit, and that was Thor Ragnarok. Not a lot of people liked Dark World, but Taika Waititi and his kind of very specific humor that he has for his films.
I just have to say, I love Taika Waititi. Yeah. I think he's so funny. And have you ever seen Jojo Rabbit?
Way back.
Have you seen it? It's so good. It's so good. It's a take on this little boy's, it's a little boy's perspective, who he's a German boy, and he's raised basically that he loves Hitler. And it takes place in the World War II. And he realizes that in the end that Hitler is actually not good. And so but it's basically at the turn where the Germans are defeated in the war, and you kind of get his perspective on everything. It's so good. Taika actually plays Hitler in the little boy's imagination.
I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah. And it's so funny. It's such a good movie.
Jeff Goldblum, just an eccentric dude.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, he was good as
Grandmaster.
The Grandmaster, yeah. Yeah, there are a couple of characters in the MCU. So the Collector, played by Benicio del Toro, they're of the same type of race, actually.
Okay.
Really kind of cool. Okay. There's other characters I know that are going to be introduced. I can't quite think of who they are right now. But I loved his casting. He was really good.
Zachary Levi is a character, or is an actor, who can officially say he's played both sides, DC and Marvel, being that he was Shazam, and now, of course, with this character, Fandral. So, pretty interesting.
Yeah, I like Zachary Levi, and
I remember him from Chuck.
I do remember the show Chuck too, yeah. Gotta give a lot of props to Cate Blanchett. You probably couldn't have casted Hela any better.
So evil.
Yeah. Oh,
but like arrogantly evil. Yeah. I don't know. Just like, come at me, bro. See what happens.
Menacing, right? Like she had no emotion about what she was doing. She's like, you're dead.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of reminded me of, not to give too much away, but kind of reminded me of the character. I know she didn't play this character, but it reminded me of this character that was in Wolverine and Deadpool. The girl. The character reminds me of Cassandra Nova from Deadpool and Wolverine, and that's just that sort of arrogant kind of like, I'm the best kind of, you know, mentality and badass.
Yeah, like very much unstoppable, right? Like even in Thor Ragnarok here, like Cate Blanchett's Hela was very much unstoppable.
She's such a good actor though too. Like everything she's in.
None of us were expecting, obviously, for her to do what she did to Mjolnir in the movie, where it just cracked it and destroyed it. That was a pretty cool scene to see.
I'm laughing because of the guy that the character Korg.
Yeah.
the Kiwi guy.
That's Taika Waititi.
Oh, that's who that is. Yeah, okay, thank you. Okay.
Yep.
Quote that I just saw, it always makes me laugh, even when I'm just reading it. I can't do the accent. I'm not even going to try, although it's a very cool accent. I can hear him saying it. But the quote is, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Korg. I'm kind of like the leader in here. I'm made of rocks, as you can see. But don't let that intimidate you. You don't need to be afraid unless you're made of scissors. Just a little rock, paper, scissors joke for you.
Yeah. That's Taika Waititi's humor for you, though. Like, just so funny. Because it's like, you don't expect it, you know?
I think the one disappointment actually I had in the movie, and it has nothing to do with the character. It's just that I would have liked to see him casted as a different character. And that's Carl Urban. He seems like an actor that should have had a bigger role, like a more menacing role. And he was kind of, again, one of those like side
characters. I wonder if there's something in his contract that, because he's doing The Boys, right, where he isn't allowed to be a bigger character.
Maybe. Yeah, that's possible. You know? I think this is before The Boys, though.
I'm pretty sure. I wonder. The Boys has been around for a few years now. I wonder. All right, well, what's the next one?
All right, so we'll move on to our last of the first half of Phase 3 here. We talked about him earlier in Captain America Civil War, and that was the Black Panther film.
Chadwick Boseman, another guy, God rest his soul.
Yeah, we'd mentioned that earlier. It definitely, like, gone too soon, you know. Cancer is a fickle thing, and it's taken too many lives. It's unfortunate, but, you know, he did an amazing job with his character. Yeah, the whole movie is great. Like, perfectly cast, and, you know, just such a good, entertaining movie.
Now, do you know back in, like, 1992, there was a planned Black Panther film? And can you guess who they were thinking of casting?
I have a guess.
I do, too. I do too.
I will
probably
say.
Probably the same one.
I wonder. You say. You go ahead.
Wesley Snipes.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
That's who it is.
Had to be. Yeah. Absolutely. You couldn't do Will Smith.
Now, they did much better later on, casting him for Blade.
Agreed. But
would have been funny to see him as the Black Panther. Again, another film. It was really cool to obviously learn a little bit more about the history of vibranium, obviously from the other films. Brandon's got something that's making him laugh here. I'm going to let him talk about it.
All I can think of is Wesley Snipes saying the famous quote from Passenger 57,
yeah,
but in Wakanda, saying it like them, "You always bit on black."
Oh, God.
That's hilarious.
I'm so sorry.
There is an actor in this movie who, in my opinion, is super underrated. Literally everything he's in, I just enjoy, and that's Martin Freeman.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Michael B. Jordan.
Well, Michael B. Jordan, too. I enjoy his movies, but Martin Freeman.
Yeah.
I think Michael B. Jordan's not underrated because he is a star, right? Like, yeah, he's generally. But Martin Freeman, he always plays a supporting character in everything he's in, and it's just like he's so good. And I've talked about this in the past. We talked about, you know, TV shows that get you hooked and stuff. And the TV series Fargo, when it first started, he was in the first season and just so good. So, yeah, Martin Freeman, in my opinion, completely underrated actor. So good, though. But, yes, Michael B. Jordan, I enjoy pretty much everything he's into.
Yeah, I talk about Michael Jordan. He was, I remember seeing him in a movie here. Unfortunately, I can't remember the name. So
was it Creed?
No, it was even before Creed.
I'm just starting naming off his movies.
Just give me a second here. I love this movie too, but I can't think of the name right now.
Couple of actors and actresses for some very, very famous TV series. You've got Danny Gurira from Walking Dead and one of my favorites.
Danny Gurira.
And Sterling K. Brown, who's from This Is Us, and he's actually in a new series out on Disney Plus, I believe. But
the one about the president, right?
Yeah.
I really want to see that. It looks good.
I got it on my list.
Yep.
Coming back to Michael B. Jordan, it was a movie called Chronicle. So it was almost like a superhero type film.
Right.
And he was
wasn't that the first person one?
Chronicle had Dane DeHaan in it and Michael B. Jordan. Dane DeHaan played Harry Osborn in the second Amazing Spider-Man film. But yeah, Michael Jordan in that movie was a really, really
Michael
good character.
Michael B. Jordan, to be
Michael
clear.
Michael B. Jordan.
You can't say Michael Jordan because,
Michael
of course,
B. Jordan, sorry.
Yeah. Because, of course, everyone's going to be like, the basketball player?
Yeah. But kind of his, like, his first, I guess, toe-dipping into, like, the superhero kind of universe.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. I hate to cut you off. Chronicle is exactly the movie I thought it was. It's that... found footage style.
Yes, there we go.
Film where they all have and they all develop like superpowers.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good movie.
It was a good movie. I enjoyed it. It takes place in Seattle. I'm not sure it was filmed. It might have been filmed in Seattle. I don't think it was filmed in Vancouver or anything. But typically, they like to film in Vancouver because it's cheaper to film in Canada than it is in the U.S.
Yeah. I really fell. We were talking about Martin Freeman earlier. I really fell in love with him in the Sherlock series.
Yeah.
But even that, before that, and I had never seen it till later on. Now I love this film. It was the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh yeah,
he was so good on that.
Absolutely. Like I said, just underrated actor. Like he's so good in everything he's in.
And what about Angela Bassett? She never ages. Ever,
never.
Ever.
Never ages.
She'll be 90 and still look like she's 40.
Yeah. You would not be able, if you look at her picture, you cannot say.
You would not be able
she's
to
obviously
tell.
In her 60s. No, you cannot tell. So yeah, she's definitely, she's hiding it well, or she just is naturally.
Naturally just holding it together.
So I know, just briefly, don't maybe go into it because it's going to be discussed later on, but I actually haven't seen the other two Black Panther movies, essentially.
I haven't either, actually. The other one, yeah.
The other one.
The one.
So is it Wakanda Forever? That's the only other one? Okay, so I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen it yet either.
Have you seen it, Paul?
I have, yes.
So how is it in comparison to this one?
Yeah, there's no comparison. The first one takes the cake on that.
Like, it doesn't have Chadwick Boseman.
It doesn't have Chadwick Boseman. Don't get me wrong. Letitia Wright as Suri is still, she's a fantastic actress.
Yeah.
And I really liked that they introduced Namor into the MCU. She doesn't have the same presence that Chadwick Boseman has. So it was still entertaining, but yeah, there's no comparison. I'd say the first Black Panther.
Yeah. Mm. Do we have anything else we want to talk about with this movie?
Yeah, other than that, I think we've covered kind of most of it. The other one I'll give kudos out to is Daniel Kaluuya. Watching him in...
I loved him in the movie Nope.
He was really
Nope
good.
Nope was great.
He was really good at Nope.
I mean, not just him, but the movie itself was really good. You know... I know we're not even having this discussion, but Jordan Peele has become quite the horror writer.
Yeah, he's
good. Whatever you could call it, thriller, I guess, but just so good.
Well, you're talking about him in the movie I'm thinking of, and it had Daniel Kaluuya, and it has to do with Jordan Peele, was Get Out.
Get Out, yeah.
Yes, that's a movie. Really good. Really
Another
good.
Jordan Peele movie, if I remember correctly. Yeah. That's kind of his first of his series of movies that he's done. But, you know, Jordan Peele, for those of you who don't know, was a comedic actor with Kid, you know, they did that series Kid and Peele, or Key and Peele, pardon me. Which was hilarious. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's so...
Aaron?
Yeah, Aaron. Oh, man. There's some, just Google or go to YouTube and search Key and Peele and you'll see some really great sketches. But such a funny actor and a funny writer. But ultimately, like his like movies that he's come out with are just incredible. Just incredible.
Yeah, they're really good.
It's the way he uses the sound to just bone chill your body.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the violins.
He really plays on that kind of like...
Senses.
Yeah.
The senses.
Yeah. Like you don't know when to be scared almost.
Yep.
So good. Well, that is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're talking about somebody else altogether, but that is the Marvel Cinematic Universe for the third volume. I guess we've got a fourth coming up here pretty soon. We've got some more movies we need to talk about. How do you feel, gentlemen?
That was good. That was a good little episode. I like the fact that... we always try to incorporate, you know, our love for sports and our love for entertainment and movies and stuff. And
our hatred for large retail environments that you can't park your car in. But, oh my gosh, it affected me so much that I just felt like I had to say something on the pod. It's just so funny. It stuck
you
with
are
me.
All of us, Joe. Yeah. Trust me, we're with you.
Just so funny how you can go from 0 to 60 like that, but... yeah, I feel good about it too. And I feel like, you know, we've always got stuff to talk about. That's the benefit of having a podcast, but, you know, it's cool when we have a history that we can kind of share and talk about like the same things that we can relate to each other for. So, well, I think that's about it, gentlemen. Before we say goodbye, just a reminder to those listening, if you guys want to reach out to us, we're always available on social media. You can reach us out on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, you name it. We're at The Puck and Pod. And, you can also, of course, find us on any platform that holds podcasts, because that's where we are. We're everywhere. Once again, for The Puck and Pod, my name is Joe.
Brando.
And I'm Paul.
We'll see you guys on the next one.